But oftentimes when you look around the table, Gen Z is not invited, and millennials are also often invited. While they can, while they don't might have the experience, definitely for Gen Z, they do have the innovative ideas, the different way of looking at things.
My name is Katharina, and I'm the community and event manager at eCulture, a company that is on a mission to shape the world of unbiased hiring. Welcome to the Oops, I'm Biased podcast. On today's episode of the Oops, I'm Biased podcast, I am speaking to Emma Achrigula. Emma is a Gen Z expert and the founder of Include Young, which is a consultancy that advises businesses on how to include Gen Z, do generation management right, and just make sure that all generations, especially the younger generations, find their way into the workforce and can be successful. There are a lot of misconceptions, a lot of stereotypes about young people, but also aging populations. So that is a short and sweet summary of ageism. She will go into much more detail and also talk about a few studies that have been done on the matter. She will talk about the distinction between ageism and youngism. We're going to talk about the effect of ageism in recruitment, and also what recruiters can do to minimize that impact. We talk a lot about what Gen Z's expectations are and why they have those expectations. And we will also talk about the challenges that they're facing in the labor market of today. Before I get into my conversation with Emma Achrigula, I would love to really quickly put in a little disclaimer. Us talking about Gen Z and youngism and Gen Z inclusion obviously is in general terms, but we're not trying to generalize a whole generation. We're going to talk about that a little later in the episode, that even though Gen Z has a specific set of circumstances, cultural happenings, historic events that come with that generation, that doesn't mean that they all have the same experience. And that is true for all generations. We're really trying to have a nuanced conversation with terms that invoke a more general nature. So look out for that piece in the conversation as well to hear more about that. And now enjoy this episode. All right. This morning, well, at least it is this morning for us when we record this. I don't yes. know when you're listening to this, but this morning I have the pleasure to introduce to you Emma Achrigula. Welcome to the podcast. It's such an honor to speak to you today.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. Really looking forward to diving in all ageism stuff related topics. So really happy to be here.
Yeah, me too. This has been a few weeks in the making. Mm-hmm. This has also been a topic that we've been wanting to cover. And you were so kind to reach out to us and say, well, can I come on the podcast, please, to discuss this? And who better to talk about ageism and youngism than you? I won't steal your thunder too much because I want you to introduce yourself. So could you, for our audience, introduce yourself, your company, and what you do in general?
Yeah, absolutely. So as Katharina already mentioned, I'm Emma Achrigula and I'm the founder of Include Young. So people sometimes stumble a bit with that because it looks a bit weird in the spelling, but it's inclusion and young people combined. Because what I really saw, for example, on LinkedIn, is that there's a lot of discourse about Gen Z, you cannot work with them, or you can, or these are four steps you have to take to retain them, or you cannot attract them. And I thought, wow, there is so much discourse. There is so much written about Gen Z. There's so much speaking about Gen Z. But is Gen Z involved in that conversation? And I very often found, no, that's actually not the case. So it was a lot of about Gen Z without Gen Z. So I thought, that's interesting because I am from that generation and a lot of the things I see on LinkedIn are in fact a bit more nuanced in real life. So maybe I should do something about that. So I started to do a lot of scientific research within organizations to really wrap my mind around, okay, what does it mean for people to work with Gen Z, but also for Gen Zers to be in organizations. And I founded my company Inclusion because of that. And we do consultancy, but also, of course, speaking, keynotes, training. So that's really fun. Yeah.
Super exciting. I mean, you just mentioned you have 15 speaking engagements in November alone. We're recording this at the beginning of November. Yay. So congratulations on that. But also you must have a very busy time raising awareness and also educating the broader audience in corporates, but in general in the industry about, everything related to how different generations can work together, especially Gen Z being included.
Yeah. Exactly, because sometimes I have the feeling that people think, oh, are you going to preach the Gen Z stuff only? Are you going to advocate why we should follow every wish of Gen Z? And that's absolutely not the case. What really my intention is to bring that Gen Z perspective, but to actually connect all the different generations so they can collaborate and work together in a better way by understanding each other better, actually. So,
it's an incredibly, I think, important topic, very practical. Nice. I do think that, with you as an expert, I think the D&I space, especially in the Netherlands, is very lucky to have added that sort of matrix of D&I to it. Because I think D&I, there's a lot of talk about gender, equality, inclusion of different ethnicities, neurodiversity, but then we don't really talk about different generations and Gen Z in a D&I conversation very much, that's my perception.
We often forget that age is a diversity dimension just as any else, like ageism, for example, is a same or a similar mechanism to sexism. You really exclude people based on their age, and we see that for younger people, so below 27, and also for older people above 55. And in that way, we cannot close our eyes for that. D&I and Gen Z or age as a diversity dimension are intrinsically linked. And that's something, sometimes a connection we do not make, but it's indeed a valuable one to also understand what is happening there.
Yeah. Well, now that we've made the connection between D&I and, your expertise, and that we've located Gen Z in the D&I discussion, could you explain in so many words what ageism and age bias actually is?
Absolutely. Yeah. So actually, in the scientific term of the word, ageism really refers to prejudice, discrimination, stereotyping against someone based on his or her age. So it can refer to prejudice against younger persons, but the term was used most by researchers to refer to prejudice against older persons. So there's a lot of investigation, a lot of research into, in what way do we exclude 55 plus people from society? In what way do we perceive old people in a way, quote unquote, of course. But actually, in the last years, it was really coined in research that we do not look often enough into that younger people are also excluded from society. We see youngism, actually, a typical form of ageism, affecting young people very much. Because in society, youth as a concept, that is really something that we value. So, those were the golden days. Everyone is always thinking about their period that they were studying, for example, or, back in the day, people really tend to value the concept of youth as very positive. But young people, and definitely young people of today, they actually face the harshest social judgment of all generations, actually, and of all generations in the past as well. So around 35-40% of people perceives young people nowadays, so Gen Z, as the most difficult generation, the most difficult to work with. Managers, 70% of managers actually doesn't really want to work with Gen Z or finds it hard to work with them. So we see that there's really a lot of friction with this new generation, and that there are a lot of harsh social judgments. And we see that that's really what youngism is all about. Because of those judgments and because of those perspectives on young people, yeah, we see that they're excluded, that they are not involved in decision making, that they're not involved in matters that concern them most. So yeah, that's a bit on ageism and youngism. And we see that companies nowadays need them. So on the one hand, you have the bias, you have the exclusion. And on the other hand, oof, I really need those young people, because we're a society that's getting grayer and grayer. And we need also that fresh energy for a sustainability of the organization. So yeah, it's a balance act. And luckily, more and more companies are starting to realize, oh, okay, this is something we have to talk about. There are different generations. They tend to look at things differently. Okay, how can we connect again? And that's, of course, where I come in.
Yeah. Great summary of, well, this topic. It seems the way that you're explaining it's, I think, much larger than also I initially thought when we scoped the topic. It's great that you make a distinction between ageism and youngism, just because, well, they're not the same thing. They fall under the same umbrella because the same mechanism works against it. But it's really good to piece those apart, because I do indeed think that the conversation is quite centered around ageism. Thinking about, okay, well, as soon as, well, you hear that age-old story of, which is horrible to hear, when people get let go at 55 and they can't find a job again. Absolutely. Because they've aged out of the workforce, even though they might have 10 years easily to go still.
Absolutely.
But on the other spectrum, well, on the other end of the spectrum, you definitely see a lot of prejudice, a lot of gatekeeping from young people in terms of expertise and opportunities. Now, this might be an easy question to answer, but it might be, I think, an important one to cover. What are the common misconceptions that you've seen about Gen Zers from the industry? And why do you think there are such big misconceptions as compared to maybe millennials?
Well, what we really see is that new generations, they tarnish our norms. So the norms that we have in society, they're questioning those. So, okay, what outdated processes do we have in the workplace is something that Gen Z is really latching on. And for example, what I see right now is that Gen Z is soft and that they're constantly burning out, but they haven't really worked yet still. So there's a lot of dead talk on one hand. And I think a common misconception is that we tend to think that before Gen Z came into the workplace, there was no burnout. Everyone was just living their greatest life, working 70 plus hours. But there was. We just didn't talk about it. It was a taboo to talk about mental health. It was a taboo to talk about burning out, about anxiety. It was there before, but we just did not speak about it. And Gen Z really opens up that conversation and is also very strict in their own boundaries with that. So sometimes that's a bit of a lot for employers. So yesterday I was at an organization where I spoke to a lot of managers. And they said, it's so weird to me that Gen Z just says, okay, I'm not doing this because it's not good for me. And on the one hand, I can understand that, because the way in which Gen Z sometimes communicates these ideas is a bit intense. So they're also still young people who need to learn, okay, how can I communicate my boundaries best? How can I speak about this best? But the idea behind this is actually not that weird, right? It's actually quite good that you also have employees who are really saying, okay, this is my boundary. I value my mental health so I can show up best at work. So you could also see it as maybe a clumsy delivery of an actually important message, because it's important, I think, that we also speak about these kinds of topics. So that is one, that they're really soft. And on the other hand, we see that the question is often raised, does Gen Z even want to work? Oh, they're so lazy, they are spoiled. And on the one hand, that's also has to do something with the way they were parented. So we see that families tend to be smaller than they used to be. So there's more attention per child. And a lot of parents also raise their child with the idea, you can have your boundaries in place. That's okay. You can stand up for yourself. But in the workplace, we do not value this as much, I would say. So really saying, oh, keep your head down and we'll talk in 5 years, you know, when you're in that more appropriate age category, maybe. And at the other hand, we see that for Gen Z, it's not that they value work less. It's just that they value their private life as well. So where for other generations, it was sometimes really the main part of their work week was work. For Gen Z, you have two main parts of this week, and that's the work life and the private life. So it's more in a balance. And you can still value work very much, but also value your private life. So they still value work, and they can work really hard. We see from science that if you really unlock the code in a way or are open to being flexible, that you can really get a very hardworking employee from Gen Z. But it's just a different way of looking at work and looking at your place in work and looking at your role and looking at where you have to work, for example. So Gen Z is really challenging these norms. And that is also something, that can be actually beneficial to your organization if you're open to it.
Yeah. You broke those up into separate categories really well. And I think they're very linked with each other. I think that's what I hear also the most from people that they say, well, do they even want to work? I think they're just too, fragile, just a bit too entitled to actually grind down and do the work and really break into the industry. So why should we make so many steps towards them? Which is definitely the wrong approach, and I completely agree with you that, well, especially COVID, I think also accelerated that development into flexible work, into remote work, which I think plays into Gen Z's hands a lot when you say, well, I'm not Gen Z, just not, but I think we as a generation really value that work-life balance, so that is definitely a model that works for us, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I must say, of course, talking about generations is also generalizing a bit. So you're always generalizing people into different categories, but it's still important to look at these different generations because they had different periods in which they grew up. Mm. So the environment, the norms, the values, the beliefs that are there in society, they change over time. So it's very different if you're born 60 years ago, for example, or if you're born right now. You have different challenges. There are different ways of seeing things. We tend to look at work, for example, differently at leisure. There are a lot of differences. So I think that's also good to mention. But absolutely, we sometimes really stereotype whole generations in boxes, and they cannot talk with us about it. But I think we really need to take one step back and connect again. So asking all generations, what do you need? Not only Gen Z, but all of them, what do you actually need when you're really upfront about it? And then you will also see that there are a lot of values that we share as human beings across generations. Yeah. And if you get there, because, for example, everyone wants to be respected in the workplace. Everyone likes some sense of openness, transparency. And if you can really get there, that you can have a conversation about that, then you can find each other again. So that's just something I wanted to add.
Yeah, it's a great disclaimer. I'm also going to put that at the beginning of the episode. I think you made a really good point in saying there's a lot more that we're like in than that we're different in. And I think that is a great thing to point out, that when we talk about
ageism, youngism, when we talk about Gen Z's expectations in the workplace, we're definitely highlighting those differences for a good reason. But we shouldn't definitely forget that there's so much that we have in common rather than in what ways we're different.
Yeah,
so thank you for that disclaimer as well.
Sure.
Now, I want to shift gears a little bit. We spent a lot of time sort of scoping the topic. And I want to now apply it to recruitment. How does ageism and youngism manifest in recruitment?
I think there's a lot of ways actually that ageism, youngism, and ageism, both forms of ageism. So ageism against 55 plus persons and ageism against younger persons, they are equally very valid. But I am just a young person. I dedicated my company to youngism and to Gen Z. So that's why I speak mostly about that. Again, a disclaimer. But I think it's good to see that youngism manifests in different ways in job interviews. Because one way that it manifests, which I think is really important, is the way that we accept less from young people within recruitment. I often speak with recruiters. I do keynotes for them. I train them on this topic. And they're saying, yeah, Gen Z, they haven't even proven themselves. And they are already coming up with all these demands. And what do they think? They should just keep their head down, gain some experience, and then we'll talk. And I think that's maybe there is a completely different way to think about this. Because let's look at Generation Z and the time that they're growing up in and environment. We see that Gen Z is growing up in a time of multi-crises. So, for example, in the Netherlands, you have the abolition of student scholarships. You had COVID-19, which fell right in the middle of their socialization period. So the period that you're most impressionable and you try to learn as much from your environment as possible. You see a high rate of inflation. You see not being able to buy a house. So the first war on the European continent since 80 years, the whole Israel-Palestina war right now, there's a lot going on. And it's really affecting Gen Z. So you see a lot of anxiety, you see a lot of mental health issues, you see a lot of loneliness. And that's also what they take with them. As we all know, you cannot really divide yourself in a work identity and a private identity. You're just one person. And we really see that Gen Z is really affected by this. So they also come into the labor market, and again, they sometimes ask in a clumsy way for what they want, but they are just trying to make a life for themselves as well. So maybe they have high demands of salary, for example, or they really want to work abroad, but they see the world burning around them, and they're just trying to create their own path in that. And they also want to try to enjoy life, and they want to have a house maybe someday. And they think that this is the way to do it. So sometimes being a bit more empathetic also with that. And also at the same time, I'm not saying you have to meet all those wishes, but really connecting with them that and explaining to them how it works, and that it's maybe not right away that they are going to get this salary, manage these expectations, also guide them a bit, have that conversation, you know, take a bit of time, and you'll see the conversation and their attitude also change. So that is something that I very oftentimes see within recruitment, that I know that the working pressure is very high also. But if you can find the time to have that conversation, that, you can humanize also these people that are also just scared and wanting to make a life for themselves. And also they are told oftentimes by teachers, by parents. You're great. Think about what you want to do. How can you contribute something meaningful? They see around them on LinkedIn, on Instagram, that everyone has an amazing job. So yeah, they're just trying to meet those expectations and to find their way in that. And I think if we look at it from that point of view, we can actually really connect again and really find each other in that, because it's again a very human value that you want to build a life for yourself and that you want to create some safety for yourselves. And that's what Gen Z is trying to do with all these demands, quote unquote.
Yeah, I think that's one big part of the equation, those mismatch, well, that mismatch in expectations. Absolutely. In terms of what a company wants and can offer in the beginning, and what candidates, especially Gen Z candidates, are expecting from an employer. Absolutely. The other part that I see, and you can tell me if I'm off base here or if my analysis is correct, with a lot of junior positions at companies or traineeships, you see a laundry list of requirements. A board year, done some abroad experience, 3 years of working experience that's relevant to the job, what have you. I think that is also a manifestation of ageism towards young people, because they need to fill all of those requirements, tick all of those boxes before they even turn 21. How can you? Sort of the bar that they set up at companies, and they don't do this in my view out of a malicious way of saying, well, let's just really rip into them. It's really about, well, they want to find the unicorn in the whole pile of candidates. But that I think really hurts the cause of including Gen Z in the workforce.
Absolutely. Yeah, because sometimes we tend to forget that these are just young people as well, indeed. Young people who are struggling and who are, as I said, trying to find their way. And then all these requirements, that's often not met. And even if they are met, I see that young people who have worked all the way through their studies, who've studied abroad, who have done all the things, when they come in a company, it's still the same. It's still, you're young, we'll talk in 5 years. Keep your head down. Please just work. Learn it behind the copy machine. I did that as well. If you want to make a promotion, you stay longer than the boss. We still have all these outdated norms in place that even when a young person meets a lot of the requirements, we still see them as young, first and foremost. And that means that they are not an equal partner to talk to. They are not and they don't have an equitable say in matters. They are not involved in decision making. So it works on the one hand that you exclude a lot of great candidates who can bring a lot of fresh ideas, fresh energy into your organization by indeed making such a laundry list. And it's absolutely not that I'm blaming any organizations. I get it. Of course, you want the unicorn. Who doesn't? But also people who do not seem to look like a unicorn are in fact a unicorn. So to have an open mind there can also really take you a long way. But also we have to challenge the perception that if you meet that long list, then are people included, young people? Oftentimes the answer is no. So it works in multiple ways.
I think I feel for both sides, because companies in the moment in time that we are right now with a shortage of candidates, with companies finding it harder and harder to find candidates that are the best one. I mean, such a privileged term anyway. On the one hand, that's a struggle by itself. And then on the other hand, having a whole generation who feels very isolated, very marginalized in terms of the opportunities they had given. And you, as you so aptly said earlier on, you have to consider what time we're living in. You can't really do a year abroad during COVID-19. I mean, in the years between about 2020 and 2022, there was nothing happening. So how can you build up that acumen for your job? So I think that there's a lot of gaps in work experience, in life experience that you can't really bring back. And I think that's definitely a very important thing to consider when writing up those job descriptions, writing up those nice to have lists, because it alienates a lot of people who, as you say, are really apt for the job, who can do it really well, but they might not be given the chance because of, just circumstances. And then the second part I would love to mention here as well is that those nice to haves are very huge markers of privilege. Lots of people can't afford to work abroad.
No.
Lots of people can't afford to do a board year and sort of take a year out of uni because they need to work on the side, as you say, to even afford studying. Lots of people can't even afford going to university, and they might even be a good fit because, well, a university degree doesn't tell you much more than they really were interested in that subject and then they passed all of those exams. I think that is also a good one to mention, especially when we look at young people and what the requirements are, which is mainly university degrees and then
Yeah, and I love the point that you're making, because right now we're really talking about Gen Z as one generation, but you of course also have a lot of divisions, a lot of subgroups within this generation. And that's also really important to acknowledge, that there are privileged, there are less privileged Gen Zers, you know, there are Gen Zers that had the chance to work during their studies, or Gen Zers who didn't. You have a lot of division, and we should also see that because talking about generations is generalizing, but it's important to also keep that mental space indeed, that there are a lot of differences within the generation as well. And privilege, gender, color, it still matters a lot. And there's a lot of discrimination also within that generation as well.
Yeah.
And it's important to just own that.
Yeah. Now, I would love to hear from you. I think you already gave a few sort of tidbits of advice. What do you think a recruiter can do to minimize the impact, rather, of ageism in their processes, in how people are hired at their company?
So I think it comes down a lot to having that mental space, keeping in mind that every generation grows up in a different period in time with different norms, values, beliefs, and to see that we now perceive work as to be one thing with a couple of norms attached to it and a couple of this is how we do things. But if you can keep that mental space by also thinking, maybe there are different ways to perceive this. Okay, Generation Z is seeing it very differently. Okay, that's interesting. What can this teach me? And also, how can I change my approach maybe based on this? And I'm not saying you have to change your approach 180 degrees only for Gen Z. But more that you keep some space to think about, okay, this is really a really different generation. They bring different things to the work floor. So they might also need a different approach. And on the one hand, your job as a recruiter can be to also explain these candidates, this is actually not how we do it, and that's because of these reasons. But also really seeing them for what they are, young people who are trying to make a way for themselves. So instead of really getting super frustrated with all these young people with their high demands, also think, okay, what is maybe below this? But because, for example, a demand for a very high salary or a lot of time off, it's just a way for them to create a safe space. in their life to feel safe. And that is, consequently, that is something we all want as people. So if you can get it back to these human values, then we can connect on that level again.
Yeah.
So that is something that I would advise recruiters to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If I can quickly summarize what you just said, I think, well, one, a listening ear to Gen Zers to hear, okay, what exactly is it that you want? Empathy towards, well, their circumstances, looking at, okay, what exactly are we working with in terms of their historical context, the current context, and why might they have these expectations? I think that's a really good question to ask yourself. And then just that space in your process or in your reflection about what you're doing to leave that little bit of room to see, okay, how can we cater to all generations in an equal way and really open ourselves up to this new incoming generation that we really need, not only because, well, we're lacking people, but also it brings in a new perspective, which then can boost creativity, innovation, yeah, those sorts of things.
Yeah. In that way, it's a very, sorry.
No, go on.
In that way, it's a very important diversity dimension, because you really have different ideas. You really have different perspectives when you're young. So you bring in indeed a fresh energy. And it comes back to really having that dialogue with all generations at the table. How are they perceiving what we're doing? How are they perceiving certain decisions that are made? But oftentimes when you look around the table, Gen Z is not invited. And millennials are also often not invited. While they might have the experience, definitely for Gen Z, they do have the innovative ideas, the different way of looking at things. So inviting them to the table could be one of the best choices you make, because it will retain them. You see really that it has such a positive influence on retention rates. It will attract more of them. And of course, you get a new diverse perspective. And that's what you want in the end, right?
Yeah, that's a great point to end on. I don't want to say anything after this. This was a really, really great bow to tie around our conversation. Thank you so much for joining me in this conversation, for bringing your perspective to that topic. I learned a lot. I hope our listeners did too. And I hope you enjoyed our conversation as much as I did.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for inviting me.
I hope that if we can do this again, you'll accept our invitation to do a part two. There's so much more to cover. We haven't even gotten stuck into generation management. There's so much more to this conversation that we could, I think, talk for hours and hours on end. But we do have to cap it here. We only have 35 minutes. But thank you to everyone who listened today. I really hope you enjoyed it. Please let us know what your takeaways were from this conversation, what you learned. I will also include Emma's links to Include Young, to herself on LinkedIn. So please reach out to her, connect with her. She has a lot to share, and I'm sure she'll answer your questions if there's anything that you're left with thinking about. And I really hope to see you in the next one. Goodbye.